Good afternoon, and welcome to Wilf's Wake Up Call, Connecting the Dots. I'm going to play you a little music from The Truth while we get things settled in here.
History is written by those who had the better weapons. If people knew the truth, it'd be a lot harder to control.
They teach us to pledge allegiance to the stars and stripes, but they need to teach allegiance to people starving in equal rights. Books they make and need replacing, it's a mystery till they read how it's into people's history. You can't discover land on which natives live and stand. The schools still spread the scam by honoring this man. I don't get it, giving credit to Columbus for atrocity. Came here to get the gold and claim the land as his property. To split it with the rich back in Europe for monopoly. They profited from the legacy of Jefferson and Washington. They wrote the Constitution, they owned hundreds of slaves, but they gave this conclusion. They said we'll get freedom from the American Revolution. But Indians and women wasn't given retribution. Or if you were poor, you were never meant to benefit. It only helped the rich get more rich, and that's the end of it. Like the war in Iraq, it goes back and has a precedent. School, they teach you just the pledge of allegiance. It's a book I read, you gotta go get so you can read it. It shows how this mess was created in the place. Face of people's history of the United States.
In the Declaration of Independence, half of society was never even mentioned. Back in the day, when we were taught to obey, and for a while that was the way that it would stay with philosophy. Men who said women are our property, rebellion never stopped cause of women, cause of women, cause of like women. The Grimke sisters on the truth and Lucretia Mott. They said the next step in the cause was to get up at Seneca Falls. While the natives still sought to take a stand, the new American government burned their homes to take their land. The natives hated the settlers for the way that they abused. That's why most tribes fought with the British in the Revolution. And after it, the government wanted more land and expanded. They moved west, but the move cost 70,000 native deaths. There was a man known for the way that he attacked them. You could find him on your $20 bills, it's Andrew Jackson. They tried to make taking native land sound more suitable. The name they gave this mission was the Indian Removal. Before all this happened, the natives were more caring. They had this land alone and were known for their sharing. It wasn't about competition and racking up private property. They was introduced to that by Europe's acts and philosophy. The government broke every treaty that they made with the natives, and today they still discriminate against immigration. In school, they teach you just the pledge of allegiance. It's a book I read, you gotta go get so you can read it. It shows how this mess was created in the place. Face of people's history of the United States. After taking native land, the government wanted more. They took California and Texas in the Mexican War. Arizona and more Mexican land than planned steadily. Take Utah and Nevada, they called it manifest destiny. The war was opposed by those in the know, like Frederick Douglass, the Quakers, and Henry David Thoreau. Little or no freedom came from the slaves' emancipations. Rich white men still were owners of every occupation. Plus the proclamation didn't stop discrimination, didn't stop the creation of a racist education. People organized in 1835 as they strive for better ways, fighting to end more than 10-hour days. And way back, it's a fact, they scripted the conscription act. So the rich didn't have to fight in the wars, only the poor. Today's the same situation with the rich who rule this nation. The richest businesses evolved, today they're called corporations. In school they teach you just the pledge of allegiance. It's a book I read, you gotta go get so you can read it. It shows how...
Well, I hope...
We're back. This is Dick Paddock with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Connecting the Dots. And my co-host, Lori Hoyt, is over there. She's about to jump in and interview our guest, our first guest.
Our first guest, yes. We're very going to have a great show. And Dick warmed us up with that enlivening music. We're going to start off with one of our brothers, Francis Coyle, who was in Washington for the October 11 mobilization in Washington, and we're going to go from that to talk also about Occupy Chapel Hill, which is going strong. And of course, I think all of you know that we're in a transformative and revolutionary time, and this is happening all over the country and all over the world. So we're going to start off with Francis, who was in Washington last week, I believe.
Yes, that was the October 6th. This was Occupy Washington, and it was promoted to, in the sense, preparation for the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan on October 10th. And so folks were all setting up with that kind of in mind. But the basic function, of course, was economic, because the folks there are really concerned about being the 99% who are out of the picture and making a point that this 1% that seems to be controlling both the economy and the political scene these days, this scene has to be changed. And the whole atmosphere there was basically focused on the 99%. The main organizers were Veterans for Peace and Code Pink, who were very, very much in evidence. In fact, one of the big demonstrations that we made there was they taped out on Liberty Plaza, which many of you may know about, is got a great number of chiseled statements of, about our American history as quoted from our greatest forefathers, both the founding and all the way through to the present. But what they did was tape out two areas that enclosed a great, huge 99%. And we managed to gather, well, there was too many people there to really fill, but the 99% just about filled half of the Liberty Plaza, and managed to get the folks in there. And then they took photographs from the tops of some of the neighboring buildings. And if you manage to get on to some of the alternative news programs that evening or next day, there were interesting shots of the 99% showed the 99 and then a little percent sign. All the people crowded into that, and that pretty well emptied the Liberty Plaza because they tried to make it as big as possible. So it really kind of set the atmosphere in a sense. And as you walked around, well, you found that, of course, there were all kinds of different groupings there, some pretty wacky and others pretty mainstream. But it was economic issues, and a lot of them focused on things as fundamental as, you know, restoring Glass-Steagall, the law that prohibited your neighborhood banks from taking your money and gambling with it like the investment banks do. And that, when that law was rescinded during the Clinton years, thanks to his Secretary of Treasury, or I can't remember whether it was Summers was actually the Treasury Secretary right at that point, or whether he was the Chief Economic Advisor. But as soon as this passed, he left the government and went to work for one of the big banks. So he had done his job.
Wow.
But actually, it was the Republicans who really provided.
Phil Graham provided the real
muscle behind removing that. And Clinton, as you remember, had other problems on his mind at the time, so I guess he kind of let this go without putting up much of a fight.
Well, but he had weakened himself, is what he had done, exactly.
But actually, the rescinding of this law is what you can say is the fundamental cause of the problem we had, because it allowed all of the commercial banks now to go and invest their money just like the investment banks. Well, the investment banks, it's their job to invest in more or less risky things, and they know the game. And in fact, they knew it so well that they were selling this bad stuff to a lot of the commercial banks who were betting on some pretty bad stuff. And as a result, many of the commercial banks folded, like Bank of America had to be taken over by Wells Fargo, simply because they put their depositors' money into these risky artificial, what they call derivatives. And
they also managed to schnozzle some whole towns to put their municipal money.
Oh yes,
they also did that to Greece. They did it, but that's a whole sad history.
Oh yeah, well, retirement funds, all kinds of people who were not accustomed to playing that Wall Street game, suddenly found that. Where they were, you know, that the banks they were trusting were no longer that trustworthy. They were able to play the game with the investment banks. And, well, the whole atmosphere was sort of focused on that, of course.
On the economics, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't entirely. It was political. Mm-hmm. Our president didn't fare very well there. It was a pretty negative atmosphere regarding President Obama. And unfortunately... in spite of the fact that there were good supporters there, especially since he's gotten on his jobs campaign. But many said, well, it's too little too late, and which may indeed be the case, but we'll see. We all wished he had started that about 2 years ago. Would have made a difference. But, well... when people got together, and of course our main focus was to have a big parade through the sore points. We made a big point of marching down through the sites for Bank of America and Wells Fargo there, which are now one. And we traveled through K Street making a lot of objectionable noises there. But the main focus of the demonstration was to stop in front of the United States Chamber of Commerce, and there we stopped, and we had speech making, and we had cheering and sloganeering, and people performed and all the rest of it. But this was, I think, consciously, people knew where the bad guys were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because the Chamber of Commerce is not just a fellowship of big business, but they're one of the main lobbyists or provider of lobbyists for bad economic policy.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a satisfying thing, and I think people really were well focused in this sense. Now, when you come around back to the what's going to happen politically, well, now there's differences there. You don't know how steadfast people will be when it comes to something as fundamental as, say, getting out the vote in the congressional elections next year, because that's where the difference is. In fact, last night, if anybody tuned in to Rachel Maddow, he had an excellent interview with Barney Frank there, who was, of course, responsible for the House part of the Dodd-Frank bill, which, thanks to Obama's chief of staff at the time, who managed to load Frank's House committee up with all kinds of blue Democrats, so that the bill that eventually was put together from the House was very, very weak because they were pandering to the banks. But it was better than nothing. But even so, you would think that the bankers are all being starved to death or something with this, the way they have opposed it. There's been opposition to the Dodd-Frank bill ever since it got in there. And
Francis, let me ask you now, you were there on the 6th, and I know some of the people you went with were staying till Sunday, and I think other people were staying. Has this segued in Washington from they wanted to be there all the month of October? I guess this has maybe become part of Occupy Washington.
Oh yeah, this was what we were doing. This was Occupy Washington.
Okay, it was Occupy Washington.
Yeah, there was another group that had been put together, was going to come down on the on the 10th or 11th, they wanted to arrive at the same anniversary of the Afghanistan war.
Mm-hmm.
Big group came in on the 6th, and these were the folks organized by Veterans for Peace and Code Pink primarily, although there were other people involved. Of course, if you listen to all of the speech making, of course, you had people from all kinds of different organizations coming up with different slants on what's wrong with the economy and the political scene, and
mm-hmm.
Urging folks to stay with it and make this permanent. It was interesting because there was a lot of symbolism there that was very interesting. You know, for one thing, the park police said there would be no tents, no habitable tents. Now, we did have a nice medical center there, nice medical center tent. There was no problem with that. So what the folks decided to do, well, we couldn't have tents, so we'll get some great big corrugated cardboard boxes and we'll make temporary residence out of that. So what
they people
did,
were going to spend the nights there.
So that they could stay in that. And said, well, we're not tents, we're staying in boxes. And the thing about it was, they had all the kids there. They were all painting those boxes up, the greatest symbolism. And this was the main focus on this was these were foreclosed homes.
So we have a live audience today. We sound a little livelier than usual here. Thank goodness for creative kids. Huh? Mm-hmm. Just.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Keep a sense of humor with all
great
of this.
Creativity there. But as I mentioned, I want to mention that Barney Frank thing again. Of course, he was saying that he's happy to see the folks there, but he says they have to do what the Tea Party did, translate it into political power.
Mm-hmm.
He said if they can't get together and get out the vote, follow through that way,
mm-hmm.
It just turns out to be fun and games in the end. The only way you're going to change anything in this country, unless you're talking about violent revolution or something like that, which we don't really need. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the Tea Party was violent enough in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that we need to settle down and do that pavement pounding and knocking on doors that comes with making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that Barney Frank and others were listened to, because certainly his whole life's work has been to ameliorate economic conditions for the American citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that his words are be taken to heart. Well, there's a couple things I might mention that are, of course, national columnists like Paul Krugman in the New York Times weighed in on this and had much the same thing to say, that especially he responded to the way Wall Street was responding to this. And his article a couple weeks ago, on the 10th of October, he was focusing on the Wall Street responses that they talked about, calling this a mob. You know, this is Eric Cantor responding to this, and more recently, Krugman took on Wall Street with their, what he called the Wall Street whiners. He says all of a sudden, nothing can keep them happy. They see all this and say, "Oh, here we've done all this great work maintaining the financial industry." Well, yeah, because that's for the ordinary citizen. That's just play money. We never see anything of that. If you might have a little money in a mutual fund have just gone to gone to pot right now. These guys are having the greatest time of their life, but Main Street isn't getting any piece of that action. So they're doing great. They're killing corporate earnings are coming in at a great rate, beating records, and the Wall Street salaries and bonuses are booming. But as soon as you mention that, maybe there ought to be a little justice around this sort of thing, you would think the end of the world was coming. And of course, I might mention, if nobody has heard Warren's...
Buffett?
Pardon?
Warren Buffett?
No. Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth
Warren's opening speech in her opening her campaign for Senate in Massachusetts. Well, I believe that speech you can get on any Twitter or YouTube or whatever if you look around for it. And it was just the greatest speech.
Of
course, the right-wing response was that, screaming the sort of socialism pure and unadulterated. and all she's asking, is that the people who are making a killing realize that they couldn't make that killing without somebody building the roads and keeping up the telephone lines and the rest of the infrastructure for them. And so all she's asking that people be mindful of that. And she didn't care. You make as big a profit as you want, but remember a little piece of that belongs to the common weal. And if you're being taxed for roads and schools, you should actually be getting on the bandwagon and seeing that appropriate financing is available for all this. So, there's all kinds of themes running out there right now. And,
well, don't you love when they cry class warfare whenever we come up with something? And of course, there's been class warfare, and they've been winning. And now we're... Dick?
Yeah, there was a sign that I'm sure is repeated all over the place, which is they only call it class warfare when we fight.
Yeah. Well, as one woman's sign said, well, you screw us, we multiply. So.
And there was another one I like too. I lost my job but found an occupation.
So you were there, you got inspired, you're just sort of wait and see if this translates into some real action. Yeah. Miriam, you wanted to chime in here? Miriam Thompson is also here.
I just want to, as Dick and I and others have been at the Occupy Chapel Hill, which I think is really remarkable. And what's so beautiful about it, and I think we should have a whole program about it, not interfering here, but I think people are really challenging both electoral politics, the government, the banks. It isn't just the banks, it's the corporation.
It's the corporations.
It didn't start with Clinton. Blake. Anyone who's heard Amy Goodman this morning was stunning. He was hired to clean up the savings and loan scandal, which at that time William Black, which at that time was the worst scandal, corporate scandal in American history. He says it's like 10 times as bad, and they don't have anybody, and they refuse to have anybody cleaning up the banks as he was ordered to by Reagan to clean up the savings and loan. Mm-hmm. So it goes way before, Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was someone
else. He's talking about the Glass-Steagall Act,
Glass-Steagall Act, right.
But, yes, there was the savings and loans were also operating on a different sort of regulations. And I think one of the Bush boys was real involved in that scandal and a few senators, the Keating Five or something.
It was older Bush. Mm-hmm. The point is that they, that there was an opportunity to regulate. And I think as Francis was saying earlier, every single president, Republican and Democrat, has refused to regulate. In fact, Black said today, you have the Bernanke and Geithner in the same positions they were in under Bush, and what kind of regulations is that going to be? So I think we need to give a lot of credit to the young people who are on the streets, and yes, they're challenging electoral politics as they have every right to do, and they're beginning the conversation as to what kind of a new society. There will be among them people who are in electoral politics, as always in our history, there'll be people out direct action, but they're the ones that have opened the debate. It has not been Obama. It has not been the Congress. It has been the young people in the streets that have opened up the debate. So we need to have more on Occupy Chapel Hill.
This is what I had so hoped that Obama, even though he's got a, after that first congressional election, had the Republicans to contend with. But whoever is in power, the president has that bully pulpit to educate the American people. And I have been for Obama, but I think he has fallen down on the job of educating people, and he's kind of keeps parodying what the Republicans are saying in his misguided effort for reaching consensus. But this is what the young people are doing now. This is what's happening. Finally, people have gotten, and people's ears are open. This is the time when we are having community civil education across the country on what this country is about and what is going on.
I think you also ought to mention, of course, I don't know if Francis mentioned it earlier, but in addition to the deregulation and the, not, you know, the banks getting all this stuff, they were also talking about the whole credit card. You know, it wasn't in, like in the early 70s when people, corporations decided we're not going to hire, we can do more with less. And so people weren't able to earn enough, and so that became the whole credit card industry run by corporations. So people are now in debt to corporations because they can't make ends meet, and so they're doing more and more credit cards. So there's a whole
he was talking about started out where they decided that they did not have to pay. Salaries have been stagnant for 30 years. And that they did not, as there was increased productivity, they did not increase salaries. And then so people, to compensate for that, started equity in their homes, getting into credit card debt. This is a relatively pretty new phenomenon, the amount of it. And this is, and now it's all collapsed in on the people. The bankers are doing fine. The government bailed them out.
But this is the broad picture of the banks. It's ownership of the credit cards. It's ownership of, you know, the wealth. It's taking over, you know, selling lousy mortgages so that people's homes are in
That's
jeopardy.
Why they're demonizing Elizabeth Warren, because she came up with some commonsensical regulations about, you know, you've got to let people know when you're going to give them extra charges if they're a day late.
And, yeah, you probably, Frances, raised a good point that people should really look up her statement. They can get it on Elizabeth Warren. Just Google Elizabeth Warren or go on YouTube.
Yes.
I think that's a really very important statement. But we should keep tuned. And by the way, people should call Mayor Kleinschmidt, and they should call Chief Blue, not thanking them, but acknowledging their efforts of keeping Peace and Justice Plaza a place for free speech, which is where, and by the way, it's not just young people. It's now becoming more intergenerational.
There was a great age mix there.
Right, and people should be there, should get there anytime they can to give protection to the, you know, people who are out there.
The white hairs and the no hairs.
The white hairs and the no hairs.
Well, Francis, do you want to, we're going to wrap up shortly. You've got plenty of time, but I just wanted to, because then we'll go into the second part of our show. But
well, there's one thing, a couple of things you should notice about this, of course. You'll get from the right-wing people saying, when we're talking about the situation with taxes, you know, they'll look at the proportion of federal revenue, and there'll be a huge percentage that's paid by the wealthiest certain percentage, and then you go on down, and then the middle class and the poor pay this very small percentage. Well, the reason for that really is because wages have gotten so bad, there's no revenue coming off of the middle class and the poor anymore, so that when you look at the income tax, especially, a large amount of it is paid by the wealthy because there's no revenue coming from the middle class. And another thing that came up, of course, you know, the Democrats have bought into the Newt Gingrich Republican pay-to-play plan, where, you know, if you wanted a chairmanship or something in the sub-chairmanship in the House, you had to raise a certain amount of money. Well, now the Democrats have taken that particular theme, and if you want to be a, say, a chairman of a fancy committee, you got to raise your $200,000 or more, and it depends upon the committee and depends upon the, you know, whether it's a subcommittee or is it a very important committee. You got to raise that much money for the party, and you got to be able to support some of the people who are in challenged congressional districts. And the figures, some of the figures I've heard were outlandish, like Nancy Pelosi, to keep her job, she's got to raise $800,000.
Now, that's a new twist. I had not heard that twist. I thought you were going to talk about where the mantra now was deficit reduction, which all during the Iraq War, nobody worried about. All during, and it's just in what, the past year, suddenly everybody's so worried about this false, I mean, not that it's not an issue, but it's such a ridiculous issue at a time when we need stimulus.
The other thing I think you may have mentioned was that we need to...
I didn't know they had to buy their seats.
No, buy your seat. Oh, that was a
this is a new one.
A dramatic one. This is the other thing, of course, is that the Citizens United, which gave, you talk about electoral politics, which gave corporations, let's just understand the extraordinary battle that we're confronting. Now they can spend anything they want. And we have one of the worst characters right here in North Carolina, which is Art Pope. And I know that some of the Occupy Chapel Hill and Durham and Raleigh are talking together about figuring out how to put the wall of shame and who Art Pope is and how to challenge him and do our own, you know, bank actions here. But Citizens United helped give them now control worse than ever of our electoral process. We've seen what that's done in Raleigh, where Art Pope has really controlled most of the seats. And so it's a challenge, as I think Francis has mentioned, to get people committed that votes can work and to running our own candidates. But there is, you know, a lot of challenge, I don't want to say despondency, but challenge that electoral politics have been bought and sold, especially as, you know, you were talking about buying committees. They bought whole elections, and now they're redistricting so they can maintain power. So we have an enormous, you know, road ahead, and everybody in the streets is going to, I think, even more than the vote, everybody in the streets just saying enough is going to be what's probably going to transform and scare the hell out of them. Wall Street said that the protesters were unsophisticated. It was in the New York Times a few days ago. I think they're very sophisticated. They know exactly where the criminals are.
And the other thing we've got to reform is the Supreme Court, because this is...
They gave them the...
Okay, we're going
to
do a
station break.
Just before we do that, Francis, we're going to do a station break and then turn to this next part of our show. Was there any last word that, or do you feel you can always come back, you know?
No, I think we both said what we need to say here.
Okay, thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you so much, Francis.
For all your work really getting this pulled together. Okay, we're going to take a station break and then Miriam is going to bring a voice from the street. This is our new series, and we'll hear more about that. So, Dick, we'll do the station break.
Yes. Uh-huh. This is WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your 100-watt low-power FM station on 103.5 FM or streaming from the website, which is wcomfm.org. You can go to that website and click on the button that says Listen Live, and you can hear us when we're on or whoever else is actually on the air. We are being brought to you, of course, by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Triangle Branch. And you can go to the Triangle Branch website, which is triangle.org. And the we are brought to you as our underwriters by the Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. We ask you to keep them in mind when it comes time to buy books or bumper stickers or get involved with the cultural events that they present. So we commend them to your attention. We're going to switch gears now, and we'll be speaking to our next guest, and Miriam Thompson is going to lead that discussion.
I just, if you'll permit me, I just wanted to say one more thing about the Chapel Hill. I'm really so enthralled with the way they're completely redesigning democratic participation. This isn't just voting and going away. This is constant conversation of how we want our communities to look. We may not all agree. It's all by consensus. And how people move ahead on consensus, where everybody's positions and issues and interventions and histories and experiences are recognized, right, is an extraordinary exercise to behold. So I really urge people. Their general assemblies are usually 6 o'clock every night, and we'll try to have that on our, announce on our radio show. By the way, it's OccupyChapelHill.org. You can get the whole schedule of events and the various committees on, on issue committees and so on. So OccupyChapelHill.org. And then, of course, the general mass thing nationwide is OccupyTogether.org.
And that's what we started off saying, that this is a transformative, revolutionary time. And we're not sure where it's going to go, but I think it's given us all hope. We've been hungering for the birth of a movement. We had the Civil Rights Movement, which transformed this country. We had the Women's Movement. We had the Anti-War Movement. And it's been a while. People have been out there, each year and at different times. Activists have been out there, but it's been difficult to get the numbers and the mass. And to get the attention, you can have 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 people in Washington for one day, and there's barely a blip on the commercial media. But this is finally, because it's day after day after day. And so this is a time that we've all been waiting for. And we are the ones, hopefully, we've been waiting for. So, yes, this is a time, if ever you've been gnashing your teeth in your living room, to get out there and support in whatever your locality is or whatever way you can. Bring some food.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned the movements. And we should go back to Martin Luther King, where we just celebrated the memorial. Because in the Civil Rights Movement, it wasn't going to happen politically or electorally until people were in the streets change. So this is, I think Laurie's right.
And it went
right.
on for a long time with a lot of
That's
suffering.
Right.
And so this is going to, so anyhow, we're going to be keeping our fingers crossed. We're going to try to have our bodies out there, and we're going to try to keep mentioning this and hope that everybody else, because everyone's got to do their part. This can't just be a few of us. We've all got to be out there and do our part. Okay, so now we're going to switch gears. Miriam?
Well, we're going to talk to Johnny Filia. I'll wait till later to say how I found Johnny Filia, but there are so many gorgeous stories. Yes, they're on the Peace and Justice Plaza, but there are so many beautiful stories of people that we meet, our neighbors that have had such wonderful stories in their lives, and we wanted to feature some of those stories from our neighbors, and this is going to be the first. But it has a particular place because, like so many others, Wilf was out, Laurie, I can't remember the date, but Wilf was out with others supporting our very cherished terrorist institution, the post office. And one of the things that, of course, they want to, corporate thieves want to do is control information. And one of the ways to control information is to reduce the power of a very important means of communication, the post office. You know, hundreds of thousands have been laid off. Post offices have been closed. But right here in Chapel Hill, the Raging Grannies, part of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, went to David Price's office,
yes,
and sang and serenaded. But the most beautiful part to me was when all my sisters went over to the post office in Timberline, and they had,
that had closed,
and they opened for us, so we could, well, it was time to close, and so we serenaded them. They took pictures of us, we took pictures of them, you know, we thanked them. We got to do it again. It
and
was just wonderful.
Lit up and all the stress, yeah, that people are worried about their jobs.
Right.
What they do is they lay a lot of people off, and then the ones who are left, they say, well, you're lucky to have the job, so, you know, we expect you to work twice as hard,
right,
for the same amount of pay. Anyhow, so yes.
Well, we have wonderful, I think probably Johnny ought to be in theater, but Johnny Filial worked, and this is very special to me because he was a postal worker in New York. And just has an extraordinary experience meeting many of the people many of us know. So I'd like to turn it over to Johnny to tell his story.
Well, oh, that was beautiful. Thank you for being on your show. I have, in New York, it was just a very exciting place. It was just like the wonders of the world for any postal carrier to carry mail in New York City. And for the important peoples I met, like mayors, presidents, movie stars, and that's all the time that we meet this. Oh, it was a hustle job. I had the job with 22 carriers for the Empire State Building. And before that, I worked from every post office from Harlem all the way down to Wall Street. I used to go to post offices and take your place when you want to go on a vacation. For 2 weeks or whatever, I'll take your place. When you come back, I go to another post office. And I got tired of that, so I started driving 5-ton trucks, going to different post offices, taking certified and registered mail all the way down to 33rd and 8th Avenue to the big post office to turn in. But even though it was just a sighting, the post office, I don't know, it was just a good dependency job. It did me well. We always knew that we had a job. And at this point of time, at one time, Federal Express was on our backs. And if you notice, we start appetizing. Post office never appetized. Things were getting a little rough for us. Now, on down the line. But it's been beautiful. I've been there 25 years, and I enjoyed. I enjoyed meeting the peoples on the streets. It was just amazing. It was cold. I had went through a whole lot of cold spells where I had to go down to 12th Avenue and pick up a postal truck. Half the time, the heater wasn't working, but I had to do the job. And
for people who don't know New York, 12th Avenue is close to the Hudson River.
Yes.
So it's very cold in the winter.
Oh, yes. I mean, I had a job like collection. We call it collection, picking up mail out the blue box. And I used to reach over and get that mail out the box. And I used to bend over, and my shirt used to come over. And that West Side River used to hit my back. And I thought maybe if before I retired, I would have arthritis. But fortunately, I didn't. But if you want to know, like, I walked in, I mean, people used to come in the post office like Eli Wallach, the one that played in the Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And he was Blondie. He was doing two Bowery Bank commercials there. And Shirley Winters, she came down to the post office at 59th Street, Columbia Circle, in her gown to pick up a bill. And I had another comedian, which I loved. He always teased me about if you ever coming back to North Carolina, and that was Nipsey Russell. He used to walk in the post office and say, "Where is the alimony line? I got to get my baby my money." So it was beautiful. And I met President President Nixon. I met him on Fifth Avenue the year before he came president. He signed my card to Richard Dick Nixon. I met President Clinton. I came across Mayor Koch. Mayor Dinkins was the first black mayor in New York, and David Dinkins. And there were just a host of guys like Miles Davis. He stayed on Riverside Drive. I met him, Eartha Kitt. It just go on. The list just go on and on and on. But it's just been a beautiful, and postal worker have been good to me. It made me feel so important. The New Yorkers made me feel so important. And when I walk into places, let the post office go through. I'd be the first in line. I used to love that. But
wasn't there a strike you had started?
Yes, I think that was, if I can remember, it was in 67 or 68. Our union struck against the government. We are not allowed to struggle against the government. But it didn't last no more than about 3 days. They called the troops in, and they couldn't box them in because they didn't know the scheme. So they had to call us back. I don't know today, to this day, I don't know if our union is still paying for that right now. But it's just been a great experience. And I just feel sorry for millions of post office because our job was like guaranteed. I mean, they laid off a lot of people, telephone people, all kinds of people in New York. But we still, we hung there, we hung on, you know. But now, I don't know, the system is just so bad now. People are buying stamps online and so forth, and then it's a political problem too up in the White House. It's causing all this problem.
We were talking about it a little bit before the show, where Congress passed this law or rule that they have to put aside 75 years
of pension. That goes to the Treasury, by
the
way.
That goes into the Treasury.
To pay for wars for some of our listeners.
And so that is what is making them so short of money. Otherwise, they have plenty of money. So I heard the head of the Letter Carriers Union refuting the new head of the post office, and the head of the post office wasn't mentioning that till. And I think this is on the Jim Lehrer News Hour. We're not talking about any.
Oh, it's been on NPR as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, any lefty show. But there's some chicanery going on there again about economics and also trying. It's part of the whole thing, I think, with Congress and some people trying to privatize everything. They're trying to privatize the post office. You know, and of course, inroads have come because of people doing things online, because of FedEx, whatever. But the post office has been holding its own, and some people say, if you want where you really can trust that mail's going to go through, and some things are really important.
Oh yes.
Then it's got to go through the post office.
Yes.
You know, and I've heard that with certain documents.
Without a first class rights, we go all the way, I guess, to the jungle. But
right.
Federal Express don't. They go as far as their money. They can make that money.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's the basic point, is that by law, everything has to be serviced by the U.S. Postal Service, or the U.S. Post Office, as it used to be. And that means
the most remote rural area.
That's right. They actually, in the early days of the country, they actually built post roads in order to deliver the mail, and that was the only access that people had of a regular any kind of a road.
Remember, and of the course, Pony Express? Would they be? And that's what they had to do. They had to ride those ponies down those roads.
This is part of the corporate footprint. So there really is a connection between what Francis was saying and these wonderful stories, this wonderful story that we're hearing today. Because to privatize the post office is the same game they're playing when they want to privatize Social Security and take over all our investments. And they're, the whole across the board, I mean, they're trying to privatize. You mentioned something very important. The reason we spent a day with the leadership of the postal worker unions outside our congressional offices was to persuade them to support a bill that would change the law that requires the post office to put 75 years, billions and billions. I mean, people are dead by then. And all it did was go to the Treasury. And I swear they used it for wars.
Yeah.
You know, what did they use it for? They certainly didn't give any of us or the postal workers or make our communities better.
Yeah.
So they took it from this pot of money, forcing the post office, and almost brought them back. So there is money.
Right.
And that was what Lori was talking about, the radio broadcast.
Right.
Price,
you,
by the way.
You are setting aside 75 years' worth of pensions. That means you are setting aside money for 10 years worth of people who aren't born yet.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
And you know, when you was mentioning something about Martin Luther King, I was just thinking about the, I took Black American History in NYU in New York, and one of the subjects was, the main professor was, he thought that Martin Luther King had one of the best speeches out, and one of he had an album called In the Midnight Order, and on that album was one of his famous quotations, and it was, "Everybody is living by the 11th commandment and not the 10th commandment. Thou shalt not get caught." And he was talking about all those politicians up there in the White House. And to this day, 43 years, they are getting caught right and left.
Right. They're not being tried and put in jail.
Yes. Yes, they're not being tried.
Right.
That was the other thing, Miriam, that William Black on Amy Goodman's show said that when they had the SNL scandal, several people
went to jail.
Several people were served with subpoenas, and many of them did go to jail. You know, they didn't get away with it, and now not one person has been subpoenaed. I think one just recently. Somebody told me one, and that Wall Street is...
And it's the lower rank. It's not the people at the top.
No.
And I think, was it Bank of America? By the way, it's Wachovia, I believe, brought Merrill... No, Bank of America that bought Merrill Lynch, and Wachovia bought another one. I mean, well, they keep making bigger...
Wells Fargo.
It's all
getting bigger.
Incestuous. Right. It's all, yes.
And that, by the way, is something else I think that Black said or others, is that we should start writing letters.
Yes.
Tired of email. We should be writing letters, folks.
Yes.
And take them to the post office with
email.
A postage stamp. And thank the postal workers for delivering them. But there was another person that actually, who's the person on WCHL? Tom Hartman was talking about this, another person people should look at, Bill Seidman, who gives the whole history of, you know, economics and how we've gotten into the position that we are now. It's really
exciting. We have Johnny here, I'd like his... to go back to you, Johnny, and this is wonderful.
I
want to
hear more people that you met. Great stories.
Well, I met Christopher Reeve, the Superman, before he got into a wheelchair. I met Clarence Weaver III.
You retired in the 1992. So the years that you were there, the 25 years that you were there, it sounds like you feel that the post office was treating the employees relatively fairly.
Oh, yes.
That couldn't have been so perfect if there was a strike, even though they weren't supposed to go strike in 67, 68. But compared, I guess we compare it the way things are now. You look back and a lot of things we didn't think were so perfect then look so much better in retrospect.
When I started working for the post office, we had the Paul Revere. I think they had the emblem and the horse was going backwards. We had a badge. And they took the badge from us, and then we got this horse, this figure on our shoulder, which we didn't like, but it was okay. And the system had changed. At one time, it wasn't Social Security in the post office. When
That's
I retired,
right.
I didn't have no Social Security at all. Zero,
right.
zero, zero. But now they do.
I know that
it
from
was
my father.
90 days probation period. I think that is 6 years probation now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
really?
They're making sure now if they can fire you when they want to fire you.
Right.
So this is part of that known of. And,
6 years probation.
Yeah.
But listen to the kind of country that, at least, you know, with its flaws, and of course you had some strong unions, let's not forget unions.
Oh, yes.
So, but the point you're making that you have a decent job,
yes.
you could raise a
that
family,
you could depend on.
Yes.
You could have a house or afford to live with, you know, with housing and health care and dignity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how can we have a country, you know, get to a country, as, you know, Francis was talking about earlier, that doesn't assure, the richest country on earth, that doesn't assure... That's so committed to the top that it isn't assuring everybody the 99%. And Francis said something important. You paid taxes.
Yes, yes.
People are with, you know, the lower people, the fewer people that are having jobs, I think there are like I don't know what it is now, Dick, 20 million are unemployed.
24 million are either unemployed or underemployed.
Or underemployed. I thought underemployed actually was even more, maybe even more. But, yeah. You know, 24 million, 50 million that don't have health care. Another umpteen millions that are underinsured for health care.
One in four children living in poverty.
And that's right.
And what does this say about the supposedly the richest country? And this is what, you know, the free, what is it, free press? We've got to do invite them in for a program. Triangle Free Press.
Triangle Free, oh, yeah.
And about that we're on the way to becoming
a third world country.
We are not going to have a middle class.
Yeah, the health care is going up. It's going up tremendously. When I retired, I think I was paying for GHI, which is government health insurance, I think it was $75. They say when you retire, you don't have to worry about it. It ain't getting no further. Now I'm paying almost $175. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every time I get my check, it's a little bit more taken out.
Mm-hmm.
See, going to the health care. Mm-hmm.
And what I don't...
Run by insurance companies, yeah, let's remind us.
And also, you know, I'm looking at our hospitals, and I don't get it. Because people don't go to the hospital. It's not like a hotel where they should be competing because you say, oh, maybe I'll go to the hospital this weekend. Gee, UNC is a great ad. But UNC and Duke and all of them are putting these ads on television that are very expensive. Oh, we've got this wonderful cancer center. Oh, we've got this heart thing. Come to us.
And
then Wake Med and UNC were fighting over the turf in Raleigh. And you know, and then I keep thinking, well, wait a minute. This is so crazy. What a hospital. What's going on with hospitals? I mean, it sounds like corporations, you know. So I'd like to have another program. I'd like to explore what, you know, and I went over to Home Depot and Duke Medical Center has this 7 or 8 story huge building over there, way from, you know, Duke Medical Center. UNC is now opening up little satellites. It's going to start a hospital in Hillsborough.
I want to want to thank Johnny.
Yes,
it's really a point. You are a point in history that shows what we could be, we could be, what every.
Where we come from,
deserves. That's right.
Had.
Every person deserves what you enjoyed over your 25-year history.
Yeah, and what we had grew up to expect.
That's right, and had a right to expect.
And had a right to expect. Right. You know, this kind of stability, and so now here we are. And Johnny, I want to thank you for coming and bringing your lovely
wife.
Oh,
he would like to say hello to his colleagues at Enterprise.
Like,
that's how I met
like to
Johnny.
Give my shout out to Enterprise on 1400 East Franklin Street. My boss is Jason, and all my coworkers are Andrew, PJ, Sarah, Kayla, and a whole host of workers that work up into Morrisville that I work with at K4. I love them. That's my family. And I'm glad I met Marianne.
Well, now you got our family. That's right. I met him through. We're not supposed to put any commercials. But now you got the Wolf family.
Okay, thank you.
And there will be a tape.
Johnny wanted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Okay.
You can give me my address. I can send it to my whatever.
Yeah. So, this is Dick Paddock, co-host of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show called Connect the Dots.
Wake up and connect the dots. Finally
first
got
you have to wake up and then connect the dots.
Yeah, wake up and connect the dots.
Wake up call.
And this is Lori Hoyt.
And
Miriam Thompson.
And Johnny Filio.
We really appreciate your coming, and of course also to Francis Coyle.
I appreciate it too.
Who left earlier.
Y'all having me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you just a little bit of going out music here from one of my favorite composers, Steve Earle.
Oh, ooh. Wonderful. Okay.
This is Lexington Street.